Hello, and welcome back to another episode of A Freaky Friday. I'm your host, Jacob Pasterfield. I'm once again here at Frequency Winery, our beautiful little sound infusion winery here in Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada. And thanks for coming back, all you beautiful people. So this episode, it was going to be about chakras and octaves and how they relate to each other, but I started writing out my material and I got about 4 pages deep without even covering half of the subject matter. So I think I'm just going to focus on octaves and the physics behind sound today. So it's a pretty dense and heady topic. I'm going to be going over a lot of physics and mathematics and quantum mechanics and all sorts of kind of technical stuff. And it's a lot in the most beautiful and awesome way. It's so much fun for me to dig into this stuff. I really enjoy it. But I'm going to be throwing a lot at you guys. So you might catch some of it. A bunch of it might go right over your head. But my intention is that as I go through all of this really fun, sciencey, analytical, brainy side of sound healing, we're going to be subtly planting little seeds of knowledge that when we go through different topics as this podcast progresses, you'll have the foundational knowledge behind the actual mechanics behind what's at work here. And a lot of these pieces of information will just kind of percolate in your subconscious until eventually you'll have one of those click moments and you'll get those big aha, and that's the beauty. That's what it's all about. That's why I'm here, is just to somewhere on the other side of the universe, someone will have one of those beautiful aha moments and those vibes will come and hit me right in my heart, and I'll just be filled with gratitude knowing that I helped share these things that I love with someone who understands. So giddy up, you know, strap on in, and we're gonna start talking about octaves. So the first thing I want to discuss is spectrum. So spectrums are kind of chunks, the divisible chunks that energy manifests itself in. And the word spectrum was introduced into optics in the 17th century by Isaac Newton. He was referring to the range of colors observed when white light was dispersed through a prism. The term then referred to a plot of light intensity or power as a function of frequency or wavelength, which can also be called a spectral density plot. So, spectrums, they're these little, you know, they're the floors and the ceilings of specific ways in which the vibration of energy manifests itself. And so the audible spectrum, or the spectrum of energy that we can hear, we measure in hertz, so that's cycles per second. And so our ears can hear around about 12 hertz, so about 12 cycles per second, up to about 20,000. Traditionally, women can hear higher frequencies than men and sing in higher frequencies, but usually it kind of starts to cliff off at about 20,000 hertz. That's 20,000 vibrations happening per second. And after we increase the frequency beyond that point, just because our ears can't hear it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so what we then move into is we move into the ultrasonic spectrum. And so that's a whole other spectrum of vibration. And then the intensity of vibrations per second gets larger and larger and larger. And then once we move too high on the ultrasonic spectrum, we go into the radio wave spectrum. And once we go to the top of that, we get into microwaves. And then once we get on top of that, we get into infrared. And then on top of the infrared spectrum becomes the visible spectrum. And the visible spectrum is a tiny, tiny, tiny little sliver. And it contains all of the light human beings can observe. And it's one of the smallest chunks. It's so tiny. If you ever have an opportunity online to look at some different spectrums, the visible light spectrum is super tiny in relationship to the rest of them. And once that vibration increases, we're getting into ultraviolet. And so now in ultraviolet light, we're having billions upon trillions of vibrations happening per second. And so it doesn't really make sense to measure them in cycles per second anymore. We start to measure nanometers in wavelengths, which we then turn into angstroms. And there's a whole bunch of very, very dense physics systems to categorize these different kinds of frequencies. But then we go further through the visible spectrum into the ultraviolet, and above ultraviolet is X-ray, into gamma rays, and then we start getting into the stellar and the planetary frequencies. So the frequencies given off by planets and the stars and the universe and the orbits and the all of these crazy, intangible, giant, giant, giant frequencies that it gets very difficult for us to even interact with. But so all of these little chunks of spectrums are basically parts of the information of energy and vibration that we get to interact with. So it has to do with the ways in which our brain perceives sensory information. So we've got our eyes and our ears and our bodies, and what they do is they convert waves into electrochemical impulses that are interpreted by our brain. So sound and light are kind of these nutrients, and because of the quality or quantity of these nutrients, they'll either charge or discharge our nervous system. So our ears and our eyes will take in sound and light through the air, through and through vision, but also our bones and our bodies have resonant conductivity, which we also receive this same information. So we begin taking in sounds and light really, really, really early in our existence. I was reading the Mozart effect, and it was referencing some work from Alfred Tomatis, who I've mentioned previously. And he's found that communication starts as early as 4 months into gestation. So 4 months in the womb, you're interacting with the sounds that you're experiencing. And these sounds actually start to help develop your brain and your nervous system, and it helps them grow as we're in utero in the womb. So it's really awesome that so quickly into our lives, we're automatically and immediately interacting with sound and vibration and light and these frequencies, and they have an effect on the development of our system. They help our brains develop and then into our nervous system, which responds to sound. Our endocrine glands respond to sound and regulate the hormonal exchange within our body. We have the vagus nerve, which is connected all the way through our body and responds to sound very intensely. But that being said, human beings only have the opportunity to participate with a very, very tiny chunk of all of the energy that exists. So, you know, as I mentioned, we can hear between 12 or so to about 20,000 hertz or cycles per second, which is only a small chunk. I mean, we have ultrasound that goes above that spectrum. And there are different animals, like dogs, can hear frequencies that are higher than the frequencies our ears can hear. So these frequencies are still happening, but we're not necessarily cognizant that they're happening. And there are frequencies way beyond our comprehension and understanding. Even in the eyes of different animals, human beings have three rods and cones in their eyes, but there are other animals who see more. Birds have the ability to see the ultrasonic spectrum of light. Birds and insects, even, that's how bees can find the pollination. That's how birds can find the air vents that they can climb upon. And I was also reading that a lot of birds have a chemical in their eyeballs that gets released. And when it gets released, they can then see the magnetic fields in the earth. And that's what caters to a lot of migration, is these birds follow these specific electromagnetic currents that exist from the earth itself, and they follow those to understand their migrational destination. We can even look at different animals like the mantis shrimp, which is this little underwater crustacean-y thing, and it has 12 rods and cones in its eyes. So the range of optic sensory information a mantis shrimp can perceive is exponentially larger than we can understand. So it's really interesting to kind of think of how much more is going on than we are really kind of aware of. And our bodies, I mean, we're almost kind of stuck because we can only experience so little, but within that tiny sliver of the movement and energy that's happening in this universe and on this planet, the richness of all of our experience stems through that, which is pretty amazing to me to think about. So what becomes really important is if these specific sounds and frequencies are nutrients, then we get to start speaking about concepts like full spectrum. And so full spectrum means that within the, you know, divisible chunk that this energy is created in, whether it be sight, or sorry, whether it be light or whether it be sound, our body wants to receive all of those different components. It's like a healthy, balanced diet. You know, you need to be eating all of the different kinds of nutrients to sustain your body as a fully functioning field. Once we start to have too much or too little of these certain elements is when our body's natural state of harmony can become unbalanced. And that's where a lot of problems can start to arise. So we can even think about light. If you've ever bought in any full spectrum lights for your fish tank or for your home, full spectrum has to do with the photon emission from those carbon molecules. So when we talk about like color temperature, what you can do is you can take a brick of carbon and you can heat it up. And once you start heating it up, the heat creates activity, and that activity releases these light, the light from it. So once you raise the temperature of this little brick of carbon to 3000 Kelvin, it starts to emit light. And if you increase that even more up to 4000 Kelvin, it starts to emit the full spectrum of light. So it's equivalent to daylight. All of the nutrients that exist within the light from the sun are created through this release of photons through the carbon being heated up. And once you go even higher to 5,000, and I think it goes up to about 8,000 or maybe 12,000 Kelvin, that's where all of the colored light comes from. So you hit your Roy G. Biv and you hit all of those colors within the prismatic light spectrum that we can see. So all of the ways in which this works is we perceive all of these different vibrations in tiny little chunks in the notes or the colors. If you kind of want, I kind of like to look at it like that way. So they're kind of like the archetypes of vibration and energy that our body as a system interacts with all of the energy around us at large. So I'm sure everyone, hopefully, has seen the image on Pink Floyd's album Dark Side of the Moon. So on that, it has the band of white light that hits the prism. And then once it hits that prism, it separates it into the seven bands. And so that gives us the rainbow colors, the Roy G. Biv. And I really, really love that image because it contains so much more information than we're aware of. So all vibration or energy, depending on the speed in which it vibrates, becomes something different. So the lower vibrations turn into matter, the higher ones turn into light, the higher ones turn into all these different x-rays and gamma rays and stellar and planetary rays. But what that is all of those different vibrations over all of these different planes and levels compose all of the energy that creates life. So that life needs to be experienced by something. Something needs to translate all of those different vibrations into an experience. So you can kind of think of your body as that little crystal prism that the light shines into, and then we dissect it into these seven little pieces, and these seven little pieces are all of the colors. And all of those colors relate to the notes on a piano or on any instrument, or the colors within the chromatic scale, and also the chakras. So all of the energy that our body is digesting and interacting with comes out in these seven different bands. There's more to it than that. That's obviously an oversimplification. But it's really cool when you think about your body as that prism. So which specific colors and frequencies do you have in a healthy abundance? Do you have the full spectrum of the sounds and the experiences and the colors and the beauty in your life that you wish to have? You know, because sometimes when we starve ourselves of those specific facets of beauty, we can kind of create imbalance within ourselves. So, okay, spectrum. You guys still with me? I know this is really heady, but we got it. You guys got this. You're all so brilliant and beautiful. This is just going to sink in. So the next step is now we have to talk about the ways in which these specific chunks or these specific facets of the prism express themselves. So we start talking about harmonics. And so harmonics are the systems in which sounds express themselves. So the first kind of tones you get are pure tones. And so those pure tones are consistent tones. They're ones that if you look at them through a computer, they make those perfect sine wave, those sideways S curves. So it goes up to the top, comes to the middle, back to the bottom, and then back to the middle. And that's one cycle. And that's what a pure tone will create. And a pure tone we can create by making tuning forks. So right here I have a tuning fork tuned to 528 hertz, which is a solfeggio frequency. It was the initial do, re, mi. It was the first mi frequency we've used. And it's called the love and life frequency. Our body creates it on a cellular level. It has to do with repairing DNA. There's a whole bunch of information about 528 hertz. And it's super cool and very beautiful and powerful. But this tuning fork will create a pure tone of that frequency. Not tremendously loud, but and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to strike two tuning forks. I put the two in tuning. Ha. There's puns for you. And it's going to give you an example of resonance and how vibration can be larger and stronger and more powerful when it creates unison with something external. So those pure tones and the consistency behind them are the key to creating these entrained states, these synchronized states that we're aiming for, which can help return that harmony to our body. And if you could hear, you hear that it's kind of got the ebb and flows and the peak of valleys. The wow, 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 wow. That kind of effect that's happening, that's the harmonic structure. So as the sound wave is created, that vibration then moves outwards. But then that vibration itself creates more vibrations on top of itself. And so our ears hear all of these tiny little vibrations of this vibration vibrating on top of itself and the ones created after. And so what that does is those harmonics are the collection of frequencies that make up the complexities of the tone. And then now we're starting to talk about timbre. So timbre is kind of like the flavor of a sound. Timbre, it's pronounced amber with a T, but it's spelt like timber. So it's very confusing. And I don't understand why this hasn't been correlated by these physicians? No, those are doctors. People who study physics and mathematics. Those guys needed to figure it out. They haven't. So what I can do is I can take that same frequency and I can play it through a different medium, like this ukulele that I have right here. I'll play 528 hertz. So these are all C notes. I'm still playing that exact same note of a C, but it sounds different. Where I'm creating a pure tone with one, the ukulele has a collection of harmonic frequencies, and that's what gives the quality or the quality and the flavor of that specific instrument its value. And what becomes really interesting is our ears are analytic, whereas our eyes are synthetic. So what that means is our eyes will see shade. If they were analytic, we instead of seeing turquoise, we would see blue sitting on top of green. But fortunately, they're not. They're synthetic. So they blend those hues and those qualities together, and we see turquoise. And so turquoise is a different expression of these two individual pieces brought together. And so that's what the synthetic side of our vision creates. Our ears, however, are analytic. So our ears hear all of the vibrations that are created throughout the humming or the resonance of that string itself. So if I pluck this C string on this ukulele, the vibration from my pluck creates the initial vibration, but then the string itself keeps that sustain of vibration happening. And so the vibration hits the very bottom of where the string is strung and the very top where the frets end. And in doing so, once it hits that end, it bounces back on top of itself. And then it hits the other side and bounces back on top of itself. And so that harmonic structure, or the humming of the vibration, is what creates those overtones and those undertones, which give each instrument or each tone its quality. So I'm going to have to apologize, because I'm going to get into the mathematics of harmonic structure. And I know I say math, and a lot of you folks just will start to tune out. And I have to apologize, because that is from the mathematic abuse you have been, you've experienced in your life. I used to hate math. I used to think it was absolutely useless. It's like, I am never going to need Pythagorean's theorem. Thanks for failing me. And that was kind of it was a very big punk rock protest. I don't need math. You can't explain it to me. Everything is experiential, yada, yada, yada. Years and years later, we come back and I find out that mathematics are kind of like the footprints of experience and the universe. So with mathematics, all we're really doing is we're following the patterns of beauty found around us. You know, mathematics is like the language that nature's beauty speaks within. It's the footprints, it's the remnants of what's left over after all of this beauty and this amazing structure of the cosmos happens around us. And the problem is, we try and define everything, and our definitions are the action, or the event itself is always greater than our definition, because our definition is subject to our individual bias. It doesn't change or alter the action again. But the problem is, we become addicted to our definitions of what life is and what everything around us is happening within. So we become so addicted that we forget that we're not even experiencing everything that there is. We go back to those animal senses. There are many other living beings on this planet who experience reality with these entirely different viewpoints, because they have access to more of the energetic interaction happening around us. Okay, sorry, a little bit of a rant there, but I don't think it'd be a real podcast without a little bit of a rant. So math is basically the patterns and rules that life itself follows inherently. I always used to think, if infinity as a construct of time exists, there would have to be rules and patterns that are also in play throughout that duration of infinity, so that the chaos can find the order and everything can kind of balance itself in this beautiful cosmic tightrope act we're experiencing. So the majority of these patterns that we see, one of the first is binary sequence. And so the binary sequence is where you take a value and you square it, so, or you double it by itself. So 2 to 4 to 8 to 16 to 32 to 64, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's the binary sequence. And that's considered the masculine pattern of growth. And I don't necessarily mean it as in gendered. I mean it more as in kind of like the polarity of a magnet. You've got like the positive and the negative pole. And that's a little bit more how I'm kind of talking about the masculine and feminine expression here. The other side is the Fibonacci series. And so the Fibonacci series creates the phi ratio. And to follow the Fibonacci series, you take what is and you add what was before it, which will give you what's next. So we start with 1. There's nothing before it, so the value becomes 1. So nothing plus 1 equals 1. Then you take that 1, and what was before it was a 1, so that gives you 2. And so the 2 and 1 gives you 3, and the 3 and 2 gives you 5, and the 5 and 3 gives you 8, and the 8 and 5 gives you 13, and on and on and on and on. And that's the Fibonacci sequence, and that is considered the feminine expression of growth. So then we get into harmonic structure. So as I strum this string on the ukulele, that vibration, as it vibrates against the beginning and the end of the string itself, creates the harmonic mathematic structure that sound wave follows. So the sound wave is itself, and then it's the double and the triple, the quadruple, times 5, times 6, times 7, times 8, times 9, times 10, times 11, times 12, times on and on and on and on, basically until the sound wave dissipates. And that's how the harmonic series is created. And so that's how we can create tuning systems. And we've used those concepts to tune our instruments. The Pythagoreans were the real mavericks when it came to the expression of shape and the dynamics of sound and why the specific tones and why these specific chords and intervals were created. Pythagoras found he could take a triangle with sides of 3, 4, and 5. And when he replaced the lining of this triangle with a string and kept that tension nice and taut. And so he would have the 3, 4, and 5. And if you strummed all of those sides in the triangle together, it would create a chord. And so 3, 4, and 5 was just one specific ratio that would create the dynamic, which creates a chord. And so you can even take that and multiply. Let's do it by 2. So that would be a triangle of 6, 8, and 10. It would still create the same chord, but it would be in higher octave. And so now what we start to do is we start to get to look at ratios and relationships. And so that's what Pythagorean's theorem meant. Something a squared plus b squared will equal c squared. And that has to do a lot with the phi ratio, which is how our entire body is created, how all of the mathematics and structures of organic growth grow within. They follow this binary or this Fibonacci series. And that's how all of the things around us in nature grow. And we use mathematics as a means to express and to define what happens, because for whatever reason, that's very important to us humans. So to put this a little bit more into perspective, so as I mentioned, this is about octaves. So what we're really going to focus on is the octaves. And what an octave is, it's a ratio of 2 to 1. So to get an octave of anything, you take the value and you divide by 2 or you multiply by 2. And that gives you the next one in the ratio. So I can take, let's say, I think it's this A note. So this is 440. I divide it by 2, 220. And one more time, 110. Or I can go the other way. 440, 880. Seventeen, 20. I apologize if my math is wrong. And I do understand the irony of getting math incorrect while trying to discuss mathematics and sound, but you know what? Judge yourself. So these octaves become very, very, very important because it is the ratio and the relationship to these intervals. So all of the intervals that are created on this piano here are synthesizers. Sorry, synthesizers. Very, very fun. I love synth. So what we are doing is we're interacting with the root notes. And then the next note we play as a ratio has a relationship to the root note. So these root notes are these almost archetypes of vibration and energy, these chakras, these notes, these colors, are all the specific chunks of value within these spectrums that we're expressing. So I'm going to read a little bit from one of my books here. And so we can get one of these very large intangible frequencies, like the frequency of a color or the frequency of the earth spinning around the sun. And this frequency and this vibration is so large and so huge, it becomes inoperable mathematically. So what we can do is we can cut their frequency in half many, many times. So what happens is if we finally cut the frequency down enough times, it turns into that audible spectrum and becomes a frequency range that we can hear. And that way we can tell what note it is. And simply because we cut the frequency in half over and over, it's still the same note. As above, so below. If it's a B above, the B below will affect us in a similar way. There's a difference in hearing pitch at a higher octave, but the energy of that pitch is the same across all octaves. So I'm just going to play a little bit of synth for you folks here, and this will give you an understanding of the systems behind an octave. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to start with my C note here, and I'm just going to play all of the intervals. So minor second, major second, minor third, major third, fourth augmented, etc., etc., till we go all the way to the octaves. And I'm just going to play them so you can kind of get a feel for the emotional dynamic created within the relationship behind these strings. Thank you. So as we go through all of those different intervals, they have a different dynamic effect and we get a different emotional response. Some of the ones create real weird, unsettling dissonance, like the tritone. It's kind of unsettling, kind of edgy. And that's the heart of blues for all of you music history aficionados. The early Christians back around St. John, they called that interval Diablos in Musica, the devil in music, because they would be chanting in these monasteries and this dissonance would just resonate for so long in these beautiful chapels they were singing in. So they preferred intervals like the perfect fourth, which feels very churchy, feels very holy, or the perfect fifth. And the perfect fifth is considered the most perfect of intervals. And you can actually, if you take a note and you play a perfect fifth and the next perfect fifth, you can go through all of the notes in an octave without repeating one. And so that's where the harmonic series and the mathematics of harmonic structure come into play. So I played all of those different intervals, but what I can do now is I'm going to go up an octave and I'm going to play those exact same intervals. And you'll find that you'll have the exact same feeling. It's just a little bit higher in the register. So these are the same notes expressed in a higher octave. So the energy embodying these notes is the same, but the actual value is doubled, so twice as much. It's always great when you hit that octave. That's the resolution. That's the kind of home note. And actually, in a lot of the theories around sound healing right now, and especially relating to PTSD, is mentally we get into these loops where we haven't been able to find that resolution. You know, you're waiting for that resolution to come, that home note to be hit. And then when it does, you get that, oh, God, that feels good, relief. So there's a lot of belief that that's what PTSD is from these traumas and these experiences. We haven't been able to find that resolution. We haven't been able to find that home note. But that's for another day, another tangent for you. So, all right, so we've listened and we've understood how the intervals are the exact same but expressed through different values, and that's how the octaves work. So we go through all of these different notes. We go through our different C notes. But what we do is, you can't see the piano, but if you ever look at a piano, you'll notice it stops and it starts at a certain point in time. We only go to a certain amount of notes, like 88 keys on a full piano. And so you hit that end here. But as I mentioned, the frequencies continue extending and extending beyond the notes we can hit on our pianos. We just can't really make the strings that will fit that and create those resonances anymore. But what we do is we can take these notes and we can octavize their ratio up. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take this C note. So we're going to take that C note, we're going to divide it or multiply by 2. And then we're going to multiply it by 2. And we're going to multiply it by 2. And maybe one more time. That's as high as we can go. So that's still a C note. And you can't hear it as well because the vibrations, the overtones, go outside of the audible range that our ears can hear. But let's pretend we've got an infinite piano and we're just expressing the values and it goes on and on and on and on and on for infinity. So I'm going to take this C note, this 528, and I'm going to go higher and higher and higher and higher and higher, an octave and octave and octave and octave and octave and octave and octave. And eventually the vibrations become so dense, we're having so many vibrations per second that we can't perceive it in the same way. And it turns into, it moves off of the audible spectrum and moves into the ultrasonic, into the radio wave spectrum, into the microwave spectrum, into the infrared spectrum, and finally back into the visible spectrum. So suddenly, with 42 steps around, give or take, it takes 42 octaves, and the density of vibration becomes so quick that our body experiences that vibration as light. And so that will then turn itself into a color. And that C note upon doing the proper mathematics and using the specific ratios, becomes the color green. So I have had the opportunity to play music with some very, very talented musicians in my day. And one musician in particular who I had a very fun time with, his name was Conrad, and he had synesthesia. So what synesthesia is it's your senses perceive things differently. So when he would hear sound, he would see colors. They would come to him prismatically, and it would be, it's hard to describe someone else's sensory experience, but from what I understand, there would be colors. He would almost visibly see colors as he was listening to music. So it was really interesting. We used to write songs with a box of crayons, and I would just know his understanding of these specific colors to the specific notes, and he would like make them bigger or smaller depending on the crescendo or the volume that we wanted to put in, and it was a really fun process. But the more I started studying sound and color and realizing the parallels in between them, it became so much more compelling to write music, because now we're writing music in the same way an artist chooses the colors for his palette for a painting. So one of my teachers at the Globe Institute, his name is Randy Masters, and he's this unbelievably amazing man who is next level mathematician, scientist, crazy download alien, awesome human being. What he did was he took Dinshaw Gadiali's color systems. And so Dinshaw Gadiali was one of the OG color therapy dudes. He figured out the ways to tune the vibrations of light to the healthy vibrational systems that they needed to be in so that they could contribute to that full spectrum, that healthy diet of light that our body craves and needs. So the original frequencies for his tuned colors, red would be 99.317 hertz, orange is 107.705, yellow 116.093, et cetera, on and on. He even measured the correct wavelength in angstroms for all of these different colors. So how this applies to us is we need the full spectrum in our diet. In our diet of energy digestion and interaction with the world and universe around us at large, we don't need to, but it's beneficial and it's healthy for you to have this full spectrum of the diet. So as I mentioned, our allopathic approach is when there's disease or some problem within the body, one of the strings of the guitars is out of tune, and our allopathic approach is we just remove the whole string and put a new one in. Whereas the naturopathic approach is we're just going to tune that string back into its proper resonance. So that's one of the reasons why singing and dancing and expression become so important, is because in our lives, we're just unfortunately exposed to a whole bunch of frequencies that aren't within that healthy spectrum that we want. Fluorescent lights are just awful. The vibrations they create are so unnatural, and our body has a really hard time. The difference in the harmonic structure of the sounds we hear, which can either charge or discharge our nervous system. If they have a lot of odd harmonics versus even harmonics in the timbre of the instrument, it will be gritty. If it's a lot of odd frequencies, it's really difficult. It's hard to listen. We call it activating. It becomes very engaging. And then even tones become calming. So depending on the structure of the vibrations within any given sound, within my voice, within the piano, I mean, I could even switch the synth on my piano. Or we can go into like some real fun grindy stuff. We're just playing around with the structure. Sorry, I got carried away with synth. We're just playing around with the structure of those sine waves, those peaks and valleys that are created by all the different kinds of noises and vibrations we see around us. So that's how we can utilize the frequencies created by the planets, by the earth, by color and translate them into music frequencies, which then our ears will perceive and benefit from. Or we can look at a different spectrum. We can take all of the sounds we're creating and properly create a composition and translate those frequencies into the colors. And we can then benefit from those colors and that full spectrum that we're achieving. So as I understand, this is probably a lot, really dense, wordy stuff. This is the foundation for a lot of the information I'm going to be talking about. My next episode is going to be about chakras. And so what happens is we're going to take all this heady and wordy, crazy physics, quantum mechanics stuff, and we're just going to let it incubate in those beautiful, beautiful brains of yours for a week. And then when we come back next week, I'm going to talk about these chakras. And so that's the way how we can kind of start to picture a body as the prism that the light creates the rainbows through. And the chakras are those archetypes. The chakras are the Roy G. Biv in the way in which picture your body as that prism on the front of the Dark Side of the Moon album. And so your chakras become those seven bandwidths, and those seven bandwidths deal with all of the different notes and the different spectrums of vibration that the universe expresses itself within. So these are all going to be topics that we'll get into, and I wanted to compress it all into one day, but I would hate to deny you folks of all of this beautiful knowledge. So thank you again for staying tuned in and for following me, and your support means a lot. I would have been surprised to find 10 listeners in total, but over the last 2 weeks, I've had about 100. So I very much appreciate you guys. If you have any questions, any comments, please feel free to send me an email, jacobpastorfield@gmail.com. Or if you're interested in more classes and discussion about sound healing, or you're interested in, if you're in the Kelowna area and you're interested in finding out what this can mean on an individual level, you can feel free to send an email to kumbayama@gmail.com. So KOOMBAYAMA@gmail.com. But thank you guys so much. I'm just so excited that I have an opportunity to do this, and I look forward to doing it again. Until then, have a wonderful evening, day, week, weekend, month, year, your whole life. I wish you nothing but happiness and joy and good vibes. So tune back in next week and we'll talk about more wonderful vibes. Love you guys. Take care. Bye.